Welcome to Third Tuesday Conversation, a monthly podcast that focuses on the ministry of faith formation with children, youth, and families in ELCA congregations. Our goal is to engage in conversations that strengthen and empower your ministry world. This podcast is produced by the ELCA Youth Ministry Network. I'm Danica Olson.
I'm Elizabeth Pedersen.
And I'm Adam Butler. Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us again for another episode of the Third Tuesday Conversation. What's good in your world, guys? How are ya?
There is not a lot good in my world because the Twins lost last night.
Oh, sorry.
Oof. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
I know. That was just really fresh wound.
Yeah. You were at the game, weren't you?
Yep.
Ooh, that's even harder.
The highs were high and the lows were very low.
What were the highs? Like waving your Homer hanky? Was that like,
listen, it's not a Homer hanky. It's a Homer towel.
Yeah, you're right. It's a red towel.
A little bit surprising, must say. No, you know what? At playoff baseball, everybody is excited. Anything is so exciting. Lose your voice over a base hit, you know, super fun. And then the whole stadium deflates when you leave three people on bases with no outs. Anyway.
Well, for our Twins fans, listeners, we're with you. We mourn with you. We grieve with you. This is painful stuff. But for our listeners that are hopefully in places like Houston and Tampa Bay and Los Angeles.
Hope is still alive.
Yep.
Who else is still left?
I don't know.
New York. I love all people who listen to this podcast and who are in this ministry game with us. But I need a couple of days to say good luck to the Yankees and their fans. I need a couple of days. I just need a couple of days. Still too fresh.
Too soon.
But good luck. Really,
it's October. It's October. I love October. I think it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I really love Halloween, so that's part
of it.
That's
true. Do you know what you're being this year?
Oh yeah.
You're ready to say it on a very public podcast?
Sure, why not? My daughter's gonna be Miss Frizzle. Our son's gonna be the Magic School Bus.
Oh my gosh.
And my husband and I are going to be two of the children in the class.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Ralphie and Phoebe.
You really go in on the whole family costume, huh?
Don't tell Jesus, but Halloween is my favorite holiday.
Well, I will leave that out tonight.
In your prayers.
I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Hey, Jesus, did you hear Danica this morning? This afternoon, whatever it is.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Gosh. Thanks for leaving
that out. That's good. So that's very involved. Good for you.
Yeah.
Hey, this seems like a segue I'm going to jump right onto, okay? Because otherwise we'll probably...
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I'm segueing.
You're going to drive that magic school bus right to where we need it to be, huh?
Yeah. Talking about how our role in the church intersects with who we are in the world and what's important to us. Hey, we're going to talk about social media today and the fact that... Well, most of us probably are on social media and use it in our everyday lives. It seems like an important topic to discuss how we as Christian public leaders use or don't use social media. And so there are, I think, many different approaches to using social media for, well, everyone, honestly, but specifically as us church people. And I mean, let's just jump right in. I'm curious about what your approach is, what you use and who you're friends with and what you decide to post, like what's your personal social media practice?
And I think that's probably the important part, the disclaimer that we'll give if a disclaimer is needed, that this is a personal approach to it. Mm-hmm. And any self-righteousness that comes through in what I'm saying, I apologize in advance because that's not the intention. This really is like personal social media usage. For me personally, and this has been, I have to give first and foremost credit to my wife early on in our relationship. She has helped me to see how interacting with social media has affected me and affected our relationship, and just to be mindful of the things that I'm putting out there and who is receiving them. And so I've really appreciated her approach to that. And it has changed my approach to social media, because I think before we started dating, and then, you know, when we got married, there was a very real point in my relationship with social media that, like, I took a different path towards it. And so I was a person who was really engaged with social media and really got a lot of fulfillment from the likes and from all the interaction and the comments and things like that. So I got a lot of self-worth from that. And so my wife helped me to see the reasons. She made me ask myself, like, why am I posting this? What am I hoping to accomplish? Is this the audience that needs to see this information first? Those kinds of things. And so I've really pulled back from using social media quite a bit. And so I go back and forth from deactivating my Facebook profile. I don't do a whole lot of posting on Facebook. I don't spend a whole lot of time on Facebook. In my own personal opinion, I think it's kind of a hellhole, but I will say there's some helpful things on there quite often as well. But you have to do a lot of digging through what I interpret as a lot of nonsense or things that I feel like I would, if I was in another person's place, I would want to be sharing those things with my circle of people outside of that arena rather than with the whole group, you know? So let's see. A good example is like when we had our daughter, you know, a lot of times we use social media to make big announcements and to put things out there so that people can see it and that we can reach people that maybe we wouldn't necessarily otherwise. And that's, again, where my wife was really helpful in that and saying, like, let's make sure we do a concerted effort to get this out to people who we want them to hear it from us, not just kind of through the non-personal avenue first, right? There are people, and there are people that might receive this information that, like, you haven't talked to and since, you know, you were in eighth grade and you're going, well, why do they need to know before maybe somebody you saw that you haven't talked to since college? Right. But so that's one of those things. So I don't use Facebook a whole lot, which then in turn means that I don't have a whole lot of interaction with people in my ministry setting on Facebook. That is because I don't use it. And also because I got burned by it really bad in the congregation that I was in before I came here. I was friends with a lot of people. Something went on in the congregation. And then social media became a place where it was really unhealthy for me to be. So that has also pulled me back from it a little bit. That said, I scroll Twitter on like a hourly basis. And I love just like saying nonsense about sports on Twitter. That's about it these days. And I use Instagram, but I'm not friends with, I try not to be friends with anyone in the congregation that I'm in. It's a really important boundary for me because I need that boundary. I need to have that space be someplace I can be that's not directly tied to the ministry I'm doing. I know that's not everybody's approach. I know that a lot of people use it as a way to communicate with their people in really good ways. Just that's my personal approach to it. It was really long. I'm sorry. Gosh.
I feel like I'm a consumer of social media more than I'm a what's the word I'm looking for? Producer?
Curator.
That makes it sound better.
Okay. I spend probably more time than I should on social media. I prefer Instagram over other platforms, but I have always felt like there are lots of people who begin conversations on social media, which quickly devolve into not conversations, but shouting matches or blame game. Or I think social media has the opportunity because it's not face to face and not, there's no empathy involved because you can't see the response or the face of someone else who you're calling a name, or there's the screen between and people don't think about that there's a real person on the other side of the screen. And so I always feel like I like to err on the side of having real conversations and sitting with people and talking about things that I'm impassioned about or ticked about or puzzled about or those kinds of things in actual real life ways. And I'm not a pastor, but a lot of the time especially around things that can be divisive, I always try to think about, like, if I were a pastor, is this something that I would say from the pulpit? Like, is this something that I would broadcast from the pulpit without being able to have a conversation? And obviously lots of things come back in conversation when you broadcast something from the pulpit, but I just feel like it's a good gut check for me to say, like, if I wouldn't say this from the pulpit, then why would I say it from social media or, you know, on a platform in which I am not actually engaging with people in conversation? And so, again, that's my personal opinion and my practice. And not everybody chooses to have that sort of gut check or filter, but that's sort of the rule of thumb I typically play. And I mean, that also breaks down quickly because I don't think I would, you know, share pictures of my children's Halloween costumes from the pulpit. But when it comes to things like, you know, politics or social issues or different concerns or questions that I've got, the lighter stuff is what I try to keep it to, because it's not a relationship ruining if there isn't a conversation, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And yet that's something that I struggle with, because I err on the side of caution for sure when it comes to what I post on social media. I try to toe the line between being authentic and having good boundaries. And so, yeah, I think a lot about what I decide to post or not post. And if I'm really not sure, I'll even text a friend and say, hey, do you think this is appropriate or not? You know, but then I see, you know, colleagues of ours out there who are brave in saying hard things or posting hard things that, like, I do have opinions about and that we should be leading with. But I'm like, am I just being a coward because I'm not willing to go there? And also, is it appropriate? Yeah. So, like, I see people who they post great things. They post about things that we, even as Christian public leaders, like, we have opinions about. Our church has opinions about things, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, like, a part of who we're called to be is to share what our church holds as true, and, you know, how speak the gospel into what's happening in the real world. And I don't know, sometimes I worry that I'm not being brave enough.
Yeah, that's an incredible point. I mean, it's very clear that many of our colleagues are brave and bold and prophetic a lot of times in what they are putting out on social media. And I commend all people who are doing that and then receiving positive feedback, but also the taking and absorbing and trying to respond faithfully and compassionately to people who are returning their post with negativity, because that is something that I share, Elizabeth, your worry about, is that I'm not brave enough and I'm not equipped enough or capable enough to receive that kind of negativity. Like, I think from a mental health standpoint, I do err on the side of not doing that, because I just don't know if I can handle it sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I also still think that I can be prophetic and bold. So I try to figure out what that looks like in my own life without using social media, and trying to be bold and prophetic, whatever word you want to use for it, in the setting that I'm in and in the relationships and the community that I'm in, so that I can still be that voice, but maybe not in that way. Because I think one of the things that, and this is what I was getting at earlier, was I think one of the things to consider is audience, right? If there is something that happens when you put things out on social media, that the intended audience receives it, but also the unintended audience receives it as well. Mm-hmm. And so there's a very clear audience that I would want to receive any particular thing, whether it's a personal thing or a political statement or, you know, a religious statement or anything like that. There is a intended audience that I want to receive that information. And from that intended audience, I will get one of two things, probably a positive response, an affirming response, or because those people know me for who I am, I will get a maybe compassionate but disagreeing point of view that I can engage back and forth. It's the unintended audience that ends up being like, again, could be positive, could be affirming, but also then because there's some sort of disconnect between me and that person, whether it's a screen or it's just years of not speaking or having thoughtful conversation, then we don't have anything to build on. And that reaction will be something different than what I intended. And that's the kind of thing that I personally can't handle. I can't do that. I can't absorb that in a way. And so that is why I need to seek that meaningful community and meaningful interaction and use my boldness in other settings. But I don't want to discount that so many people find that meaning and that community on social media and on the internet, and it ends up being a very life-giving thing for them. And they can absorb some of that in a better way than I can, and are using it to be bold and prophetic. I keep using those words, but I think it's true. I think there are some people who can use that in that way and can build community through that, and really change the narrative and really push change and push innovation and push whatever it is. It's just not my thing. And so I do worry, I'm all circling back, Elizabeth, I do worry that because it's not my thing and because I don't feel like I can always receive that kind of feedback from whatever I'm going to share, that I am not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And that is that's a tough spot to be in because of the way that people have found meaningful community and have found it to be a really good medium for change and for getting voices heard, that like, am I not doing something that I'm supposed to be doing in my, like my public leadership role as a pastor in a community and just in general in the church?
It messes a little bit with my sense of call and what that means for my whole life. I mean, I am called to this position in this church, in this community. And in a larger sense, I mean, am I not called all the time, everywhere, you know, to be a leader? I don't know. That's where I struggle with it, because just something about me, like I'm protective of my identity as a church person. Like I'm not, like when I meet people in public, I'm pretty reserved about sharing that part of my identity. And, you know, that's maybe a whole nother conversation, but like, I think that's where I get mixed up in, yeah, what my role is in being this person called to serve in our church, and how that, yeah, what that means for out in public and out in the world. And out in the world is social media. And, you know, and then there's a sense of like wanting to be selfish about and protecting what's mine and keeping that for myself, which is what I do. You know, but that doesn't make it less uncomfortable for me in figuring this stuff out.
I think there's, it's an interesting, you kind of, to your point, Elizabeth, that there are expectations and benchmarks that are placed on us as Christian public leaders that people don't hold themselves to, who don't work in the church. And I go back and forth on that because it feels a little bit like, yeah, perhaps I should be held differently as a Christian public leader. But at the same time, it feels like, shouldn't we all have sort of this code of conduct that is about the thriving of our neighbor, that cares about the things we say about the people who are in the conversation or are not in the conversation, or to speak up against something and to have somebody else say, well, I thought you worked in the church, as if to say, like, working in the church means you just need to like sit down and take something, you know, or like not speak up against or for or whatever. It's tricky, I think, that we get caught in these weird expectations, other people's expectations of what we should and shouldn't say. I don't know. What do you think about that? Do you think that's fair? Do you think that's good? Do you think that's right? Because, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I do think that people go like, oh, whoa, they said that and they work in the church. Like, what do you think?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think it's easy to get caught up in the idea of what somebody who works in the church, that somebody who works in the church is, you know, holier than the average person, which is just so far from the truth, right? But yeah, there's that. But this isn't the only place where something like that applies, right? I mean, when you look at, like, for example, a dentist who has bad teeth is like, you're going to judge that dentist pretty hard.
Jeez, but, you hear that, dentist?
All you dentists listening to our podcast, get your teeth fixed.
I don't, that's the first
if there are dentists listening to our podcast, welcome. And wow,
I'm not saying that I judge them, I'm just saying it's a thing. You can apply it to like anybody out in the world, right? And I completely agree with you that we should all be held to the same standard of caring for your neighbor and being kind and lifting each other up. And, you know, that's a part of what drives me nuts about social media in particular, is the way that people can be so flippant about bashing other humans. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard for me. So there's one part of me that is in no way willing to engage in that or add to that unhealthy cycle, you know? But then, yeah, then there's the other side of it that I've already said. So.
Yeah, because people are wanting us to say something and then are surprised when we say something.
Yeah.
In so many ways, there's this feeling of a demand upon us to say something. And then it's surprising when that something doesn't either line up or is like maybe a little bit beyond what they were expecting, you know? So then there is this difficulty on social media of, I don't know, like a calling to proclaim, but then to also to run into issues with what you're saying, then affecting the very real world of ministry that you're doing in your church. So I think that's an important point that you're both making, that there's this thing going on of, We have to be a voice, right? But then what does that voice look like on social media? Does that make sense?
I often think that for many topics, there are just those wolves waiting behind the tree to pounce all over you and ruin you. I mean, I just think that's the thing with social media, is that sometimes people are just waiting for an opportunity to destroy you for whatever reason. And for that to happen in a very public way just seems like such waste of time and energy. Like, if that person actually feels that way, then have the courage to have the conversation not online, right? Like, people get to hide behind the screen, like I said before, in ways that allow them to say something that are a veiled version of the truth, or I don't know. I think there's some destruction that can happen when people are just waiting for you to say something that blows your reputation or your credibility or whatever out of the water, which was never intended. That goes back to the conversation portion, you know, that posting something online doesn't always lend itself to conversation. It lends itself to one-ups and...
Mm-hmm. That's part of it too for me, is that I refuse to speak about anything unless I feel like I'm well-informed enough to have an opinion about it, you know, like I've got my own inner thoughts, but I'm not going to say it out loud unless I have considered all perspectives and understand what I'm saying and why I'm saying it. And yeah, I think that's what is difficult about social media too, is that I don't think everybody does that. And so it's very easy to get into conflict when we all have unvetted opinions. Yeah.
It seems though that, okay, so we've been talking a lot about like the dark side of it, but
I know this is sad,
but like thinking about even sharing the gospel or like posting something about like, you know, God is so good, or like those are super vulnerable things to say and share. And so as we're having this conversation, I'm thinking like, I even censor myself from saying some of those things, even though I have thought long and hard about it. And that's how I truly feel. I censor some of the things that I say simply because I am looking not to seem righteous or
too holy.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's that interesting piece of like, even the stuff that I'm super sure about and that I center my life's work around, because I don't have an actual relationship with a lot of the people that I am quote unquote friends with, I tend to keep some of those things to myself, which then also is like, why is it that I am deciding to censor that? I don't know. You have thoughts about that?
I I do the same thing. I definitely like put things through that filter of, mm-hmm. you know, not wanting to, in the same ways of not wanting to like rustle up any sort of drama or argument or conflict on Facebook. I also don't necessarily want to come across, or I like not, it's, I don't even know if it's come across, but it's just, I want to be authentic, but I also want to be mindful of the things that I'm putting out there from the perspective of keeping my vulnerability in check, but also wanting, there is some need for wanting to be vulnerable. There's an interesting thing I think that's happening on social media right now is that I think people are being more vulnerable and more bold with what they're sharing. And from a very negative standpoint, like people are emboldened to share like mm-hmm. really awful crap on social media. And that's its own problem. But I think if we're looking at it from the positive angle and how we engage with people on social media as Christian public leaders, there's this interesting thing that's happening right now of, I think a lot of people are feeling emboldened to be vulnerable, as if like we've spent so much time on social media painting this picture of perfection and what life is supposed to be. And mm-hmm. now it's been, there's something that's the flip that's switching of, you know, I'm going to be bold with what I'm saying here, and it's going to be the real honest truth. And it's throwing me off for sure of like, whoa, like, I don't know. Is this the place for this? I don't know if this is what this is for either, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's throwing me off a little bit, but I think there's an opportunity for us to engage that in a really powerful way, in that we get to be the alternative voices that help to shape where that meaning is found. And a friend of mine who's also a pastor, we were talking about this, and he just said that he's just seen some really, really awful theology on Facebook lately. And he was reminding me that we are past, and he said, Adam, we're pastors this week, if for nothing else than to be an alternative voice to the noise of that world, right? And so that can play out in a lot of different ways, but it's making me think in this particular context of, we get to be the alternative voice to that theology that is, to the theology that's crap, right? So then, so like the really, the ways that we don't want people to see Christianity and the church and things like that. But mm-hmm. we also get to be kind of an alternative voice for people that saying like, not outright, like don't DM somebody this, right? But like, I see you are reaching out, and I see you are being vulnerable, and I see that you're trying to find meaning in this experience that you're having. Let me help you frame that. Let me help you frame that in a way that's helpful and maybe not just empty from the comment section that you're getting from people and the little hearts and the little blue thumbs up. Like maybe our engagement on social media can take on this kind of alternative voice. And mm-hmm. so when somebody does post something super vulnerable and really like really personal, that we can take that and maybe help frame it in a way that it comes out in a way of compassion, that a personal compassion and personal reaching out that maybe they're not receiving from other voices. I don't know. I just was thinking that from a social media positive standpoint, this is a really unique opportunity that we have as the church and as leaders to be an alternative voice. And we see that happening in a lot of different ways, but I wonder how that works for those of us who maybe are a little bit more disengaged from it on a daily basis, what that looks like.
Yeah. So Adam, does that make you want to go back on Facebook and get to it, or?
No, not a chance.
No. Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
I feel the same way. I don't.
It doesn't. And I don't know what that's, all about. I mean, I've said a lot of things and all of those play into it, but no, it doesn't make me want to go on Facebook and then just like start ranting about all this nonsense theology that I see on Facebook, or like what I do say in the comfort of my own home about the posts that I see, or, you know, and I'm not just making this up to put it through some sort of theological lens or some like really thoughtful thing. Like when people do post very personal things on Facebook or Instagram, and also when people post like, I mean, is everybody selling beauty counter makeup right now? Like I just, I see it all over the place. And there's so much, but that's what I'm saying is that there's so much meaning making happening. There's so many people finding meaning in all these different places. And I think people are finding meaning in like making good choices when it comes to makeup. I don't wear makeup and that's not my world, but you know, there is some meaning making happening there. And I'm wondering how we see this stuff that's happening and how we end up being an alternative voice. For me, it's not going on Facebook and telling people, stop putting your time into these things and go and do this. But it is kind of saying like, well, I recognize the people that we're working with are trying to find meaning in a lot of different ways. And they are, which is good. But there is also an alternative voice that we can offer to that, or a deeper place that we can help them go. And I personally do that through like personal interaction, through the ministry I do in the particular place that I'm in.
It seems to me that if we all decided that the way we behave online is no different than we behave in real life, right? Like you hear someone spewing gross theology or religious platitudes or, you know, whatever. None of us are going to pounce all over a grieving person and be like, well, that's just a bunch of crap. Like, God didn't need any more angels or any whatever. Like, we would say, like, we would meet those things, those pithy sayings or the, you know, the stuff that people are trying to make sense of tragedy or whatever with relationship, right? And come alongside them. But our words on a screen can only go so far. And like, I wouldn't tell the person in the grocery store that someone close to me just died or, you know, so it's also like thinking about who would you just tell some of the things that people post on online? Would you tell the person who babysat you when you were four, who you happen to be friends with, but have not seen one time since? Would you talk to them about some of these things? Probably not. So engaging social media as you engage the world of like both your reactions, but also the things you post and share, is it the right platform? I don't know.
I hear what you're saying and agree. And the fact of the matter is, this is where the world is. This is what we're doing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Like,
we're not going to, nobody is going to stop posting about whatever. You know what I mean? And so then I wonder, okay. So really what it comes down to is, what's my role? Like, can I just use social media as a consumer and not worry about my call to ministry? Or do I need to be worrying a little bit about it? Because I work at the church, I work in the church, and I'm connected with people who are also in the church or whatever, just about my own identity. Like, what do you see as your role in regard to social media? I think all of our answers would be different. And I'm not saying there is a right one, but I'm curious. For each of you, what you would say, what's your role on social media?
I'm not sure I have an answer, if I'm being completely honest, because I, for all the same reasons that we just have talked about, that I personally don't see as much use in it as others do in my very same position. So from that perspective, I will differ from people in terms of what the role is. And then on the flip side, because of that difference, I wonder what my role should be in social media. But I will say that I don't think I want to disconnect from it completely or stop taking in what I'm seeing people post, because I think it helps make me a better leader and it helps to frame the way that I approach doing ministry, that people are feeling the need to share these things and to receive affirmation from people and to receive celebration with them, but also grief with them. And so I think social media can be that place, and I want it to continue to be that place for people if it truly is allowing for them to feel fulfilled in that way. I also think that in person, like shared humanity with others is also an important piece as well. So I want to encourage the same kind of, or like the same feeling of being able to be vulnerable in our communities as well. Like, I want this to be, this physical space to be an arena for people to feel just as emboldened and just as confident and just as belonging as they do on the internet part of it. And so, and that's why I think so many people are finding their place on social media, is because largely our physical communities, our in-person communities have moved away from that kind of engagement. And so what does that look like for us? I don't know. I mean, people are writing long thought out books about this stuff and still like, and it changes in 3 years, right? So, I mean, there's no place that we can perfectly land here, but I think I'm going to keep going at it the way that I'm going at it. And then also being willing to adapt as I go, because that's what I've done for the last, 10 or so years as I've been in this work. So yeah, that's kind of where I land, I guess.
I think it's good for us, regardless of where we land, it's good for us in our role to think about it. And and whatever you decide your approach or role or whatever is going to be, thinking through it and how your behavior on social media intersects with your call to ministry, I believe is crucial. I'm still going to, keep being me and holding the boundaries that I hold, but I just try, as far as my role goes, I just try to hold up the boundaries that need to be in place for me as a Christian public leader. I just try to hold those up online, but also be willing to be open and sort of vulnerable enough for people to see me, sort of feel strongly curated.
Well, yeah, I think
like for all of us,
just to build on that, one of the goals I think we need to have is authenticity. And one of the approaches to this, and maybe the role that we have, is to model authenticity as much as we possibly can, so that what we're putting out there and what we're posting is as authentic who we are and authentic as human beings as possible, so that behavior might model for others a similar authenticity with who they are and what they're willing to share. And that's, I see a lot of our colleagues doing that in really good ways. And so it's not the way that I would do it, but it's still a good, authentic way of doing it.
I think the authenticity part goes back to what we had earlier in the conversation, just that there are people who feel emboldened, as you said, to say all these things, and that's not authentic to who I am. Like, I will have a bold and authentic conversation with my close people, but I'm not just going to be shouting things from the rooftop because I feel like, because I have this particular role or whatever, that's not authentic to who I am. And so I choose not to do that on social media because I choose not to behave that way in my life. I have many impassioned conversations, right, with people who know me across time and space and know exactly who I am, and that I'm coming from a perspective that wants good for people, or those kinds of things. And so I guess if we're talking role, my role on social media is to behave in the same way that I behave in all the other roles of my life, which is have a conversational community in which the deepest, biggest, hardest, or best things are shared, because it's in authentic and real relationship versus spewing of thoughts, words, and deeds.
Good one. Very liturgical of you. Good job.
Thank you,
Annika.
Thanks.
The last point is we didn't even touch in this conversation on we all work with young people, and young people use social media in a completely different way than we do. Right. So that maybe we'll circle back to this maybe, because we do need to talk about like how we engage with social media with a generation that does it in a completely different way than we do. And so a lot of the things that we talked about today just don't even line up or apply to that part of the world. And that wasn't the original intention of the conversation necessarily, but like that is vital to our roles as people who work with young people, is they're using social media in ways that I don't do. I'm the old person now with social media. So that's a tough thing to admit to myself, but it's true that I don't use Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are like way down on the list. And so what does that mean for me as a person who works with young people, and how do we engage that part? And that's a completely different story.
Yep. That'll be part two.
I have a random thought as we're just chatting about this. I'd be curious to know from the people who have listened to this episode, what are the questions that you have around youth and social media, or the things that would be interesting to hear about, or someone to hear from, or whatever? If you heard something or you have an idea about a future part two episode of this, email us. 3tc@elcaymnet.org. We would love to hear from you about the things you're thinking about around social media and young people.
Yes, we will do research and discuss.
That'd be awesome.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks you guys for kicking around these ideas.
Good stuff. And thank you all for the ways that you engage on social media in really good, powerful ways. Because again, this conversation, if it ever took that tone, it's not our intention. Like, use social media in the ways that you're using it to change people's lives and to change the narrative and to really drive conversation, because there's some really powerful stuff going on. So keep doing that and keep engaging in really good ways too, and do so in that authentic, you know, meaningful way that we're hoping that we can drive as leaders. So keep it up. Keep up the good work.
Absolutely. One quick announcement for you today. Make sure that you register for the extravaganza coming up this year in Anaheim, California. Info about schedule, speakers, tracks, travel discounts, all of that is at ext20.org. We will see you there with the mouse. Thanks so much for listening. New podcasts are released on the third Tuesday of every month. Be sure to subscribe so you receive them as they come out, and share with your friends. Also, thanks to Paul Amlin, the 3TC producer, for his work. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.